You are listening to the Myth TV Cast.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat DeVilla. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
I'm good. And also joining us tonight is the infamous Gadget Guru from the Andrew Buffet podcast. Gadget, welcome to the show.
You're not going to play my theme song as an intro?
I'll add it in post-recording.
As I walk into the studio?
You know, I actually heard that song at my sister's wedding.
The whole thing?
It wasn't the same version. It was definitely the same song, but it was a definitely different version. It sounded like a slightly newer version of it.
Well, I'm waiting for somebody to do the Mexican / salsa version.
Okay.
I already got a guy itself who had a tuba play it for me.
What's the name of that song?
Oh, When You're Smiling.
And it's pretty old, right? What is that, from like the 1920s?
The version that we use is a public domain version from 1934 by Cliff Burner, who is considered one of the pioneers of Western swing.
Yeah, it's kind of jazzy. It's kind of like that guitar jazz sound from like the 1930s, 40s, almost like a Django Reinhardt kind of a thing.
What, you mean like this?
It's a nice song.
He's holding out on us. He could have plugged that in right himself.
I know. So anyhow.
I don't know how to turn that off.
So what do we got to talk about tonight, guys?
Well, before we get into what Guru wants to talk about, I did do an upgrade today to Myth TV 26.26, and Pat, I ran into the same issues as you did. So we were chatting a little bit about it earlier, and very similar to what you had mentioned. I had to go in and manually update not the config XML file in my home directory under the .mythtv directory, but in the Etsy mythtv directory. There's a second config.xml file. So I had to update that one. I had to update the database and, hostname, user, and password in the Apache config file as well. But one thing that was slightly different with what mine was than what you had mentioned on the last show was I had to... after I rebooted it the first time, so in other words, I updated the config.xml file, reran apt-get upgrade and dpkg mythtv database to make sure everything was all cleaned up and rebooted, I had to then kill the front end, go in and manually start it up so that it would kick off its own upgrade for all of the schemas that are tied into the front end stuff, like the Myth Music database schema, and there's a couple of other things that all had to take place. Once I ran that, everything's fine. So everything's back up. I didn't lose any recordings or anything like that. It's actually, pretty clean, except for this one little, step here where I had to, fix the database stuff. So all in all, it ran pretty well, and it's been recording stuff all day long here. Not all day long, but, a good portion of the day. It had things going here and there, and so far seems to be working out pretty well, both the front end in the sunroom and the main, dual master back end and front end in the entertainment center in the basement.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a common problem with the upgrade process on the Mythbuntu setup. It sounds like they didn't update the script so that it would update the file properly. So, it's a little annoying, and I definitely experienced what you discussed, Dan, with the front end kind of going crazy a little bit. I had to kill it.
Yeah, it did. It was still trying to use the old database schema, and then once you run it manually that first time, then it was fine. There was no issue after that.
And did you have the issue with the MythWeb too?
Yeah, I was getting errors popping up indicating that it couldn't access certain items. You more or less get a white page with some PHP errors on them, and then after I went in and plugged it and restarted Apache, everything was fine.
Yeah, so you basically had the same exact problems I did.
Yeah, I don't know if this is an issue with the 64-bit version being different from the 32-bit version, or I don't have any real extra repositories. I mean, I did have some stuff for like the libcec stuff in there, but other than that, I don't have anything. My system is you know, a fresh install from, when did I do it? Back in August, I think it was. I rebuilt everything. So there's nothing really crazy going on the box. I mean, all it does is it just sits there in the entertainment center and serves up, you know, Myth TV content. So I'm not entirely sure what's so different about mine and your systems compared to what other people's have seen. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I read through that whole mailing list entry on it, and it indicated that, you know, some guys were trying it out, you know, a fresh like 1204, you know, install in a VM, and they had no issues with it. I don't know if that was, you know, fresh install in a VM and no tuners or with tuners or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, it seems like it's kind of, you know, you either go one way or the other, and it's kind of always the same result whether you go you don't have any issue or you have this specific issue.
I didn't have any issue with my Mythbuntu upgrade.
Because you're running Fedora.
Actually, I do have one separate independent system that is running Mythbuntu. It is at my grandparents' house, and I was there a lot for the holidays, so I did upgrade it to 0.26.
And how's their system running?
It was working wonderfully up until the time that the computer crashed, died, and I had to rebuild it.
So it was what, like a hard drive problem?
Yep, hard drive dead.
Yeah, hard drive, when hardware goes, it's usually power supplies and hard drives, usually. Hard drive got corrupted, or the power supply will fry out, and if you're lucky, it doesn't kill the motherboard in the process of dying.
Unless you live in the Fry household.
Yeah, you got weird power surges going on.
Well, that happens to be where my old hardware goes to die.
Up to the grandparents?
Well, you know, I go up there to visit, and I hang out, and I have a space up there that's dedicated to me. Like a closet, only I sleep in it.
You got your little closet that you crawl into at night. It's like those Japanese hotels where, you know, it's basically just a little tube where you crawl into and go to sleep.
Actually, it more reminds me of my dorm room in college.
So how's your system running, Gadget Guru? Your main box?
Well, it needs to be completely disassembled and rebuilt. Unfortunately, I just hit a setback on that.
Money?
No. I decided that since I had skipped Fedora 17, and I am a Fedora installer, I would just wait for 18 at the end of November. They pushed it back.
Uh-huh. I haven't run Fedora like full-time in years. I've dabbled with it a couple times just to check it out. And I like what they're doing, you know. They seem to have their packaging is all up to date and everything. But, I don't know. I've had issues where the installer wouldn't work properly, you know, where it would work with every other distribution.
How recently, though?
Yeah, last one I did was maybe a year and a half ago. It was the last time I played with it.
I honestly haven't had any trouble with the installer. There was one of maybe around Fedora 1 and 2 where I was having a little installer trouble, but most of my problems right now have to do with how long I've had the system running without really cleaning out some of the garbage.
So you just basically have some just cruft building up where, you know, processes and configuration files are just sitting around and then they need to be cleaned out and whatever.
You were also saying that you could no longer like delete things, though, right? We were talking about this the other day, and he's saying that you have recordings that you can't delete from like MythWeb or anything like that. Like, nothing allows you to delete them.
Well, actually, I had several problems with MythWeb, and I thought it might have had something to do with the fact that somehow MythWeb updated to 0.26, but nothing else did because it's not quite ready yet. But basically, in MythWeb, the descriptions that are coming up when I hover over the programs are actually for completely different programs. I apparently haven't run a job since January, and I wasn't paying enough attention to notice.
You know what? I think I know why that is, because in 26 all the dates are now in UTC. So I bet if you looked at whatever was, you know, supposed to be in that time slot for what, four or five hours, depending upon the time of the year, 4 or 5 hours later, you'd probably see that that's the description that you're for that episode that you're seeing. When you hover over something, let's say at 9 o'clock, you're going to get it for like 1 o'clock in the morning type of a thing.
Yeah, I thought of that, but just it's still coming in on the rollback, so something must have still be flipped. But also I have a few other odd problems. So I haven't actually had the thing completely empty since 2008. It's time.
That's about how long my systems last before the hardware finally dies out.
That's a pretty long time.
For the longest time, I had a Debian system that was running, and I had that thing for years, man. It just kept running. I upgraded it, and then I didn't have any problems, and then finally, you know, the hardware that I had it on was just getting old, and it was time to retire it.
I know the hardware's been replaced. It's just some of the software has been running, and some of it hasn't. This is the wonder of partitioning and multiple hard drives, where you can build up the cruft you mentioned and still have done regular upgrades.
You know what? I think all the problems would be solved if we just moved to Windows 8, you know, so that we can have this these big blocks and this nice ugly user interface.
Just installed it the other day, my friend.
What'd you think?
I can't stand it, and I don't even use. I use it to test websites, and that's it. And it is awful. You know, you weren't on the other night, right? You weren't on the tech show the other night with us, were you, Pat?
Yes, I was. No. Yes, I was.
Oh, yeah, you were. But no,
you shouldn't remember that Pat was there.
Yeah. The weirdest thing is, for people who haven't listened to that episode, the weirdest thing is you have to dig like 7 levels to just shut the thing down. Okay, if you're on that big blocky step, and maybe I'm missing something here, but it's not, you know, plainly aware to me that I should be able to shut the machine down by just clicking a button somewhere, but I have to click the little special desktop icon, which I'm afraid if you remove that thing, I don't know how the hell you're getting onto the desktop. Then you have to take your mouse all the way up to the top right corner of the screen. There's like a few pixels there would actually open up a side menu. Then you got to go straight down there to hit the settings. And finally, you get a power button, which lets you, once you click that, you have to click shut down or restart. So, I mean, that is far too much to have to go to just shut something down, right? I mean, it is very, very odd. It is very odd. They've moved to the whole, like, web.
Who's going to make
the GNOME 3 joke? They moved to the whole, like, web store type of a thing, so you'll be able to, you know, download all the software from their store, and then, you know, you can sign in with, like, an already established, like, Microsoft account, which I don't have. So I had to figure out how to make a local user on the thing during the install process, which is not plainly, you know, aware either. I mean, you have to kind of dig around to see, you know, how do you get this local user created? They want you to just sign in, and they warn you numerous times, oh, well, we won't be able to sync all of your settings and save all of your data for you, you know. So I don't like it. I don't like it one bit, you know. This whole interface thing, which it puts all the stuff on it that I don't want. I'm personally, if you were to see my desktop, I got 2 screens here. There's not a damn thing on them except for when no applications are open, the Ubuntu, you know, Unity menu is over there. That's it. There's nothing else.
You know what? I'm just waiting for the Windows apologist to pop on and say it's a great leap forward and it's innovative.
But you want me to call my co-host from Android Buffet?
I was going to say.
No, he doesn't like Windows 8 either. But,
That's interesting.
Well, again, it's a big departure even for people who love Windows, so I'm not surprised that he's a little reluctant on it.
I saw something today that was comparing it to, you know, 95 to XP change, that type of a thing. And they're saying, oh, it's the same. It's today's XP, they said, or something like that. And they're comparing all these different things about it. And I'm like, whatever. Nobody wants this, and everybody who has used it said that they don't like this. So, and it's not. I mean, it's made for a finger interface, not made for, you know. It's made so you can swipe, you know, back and forth to get different panes of things. You know, it's not made for,
you know,
for a power user.
It seems iOS is and it seems like the Mac and Apple, they're kind of doing the same thing. They're moving in that direction where they have one interface for, you know, every single device, and I don't know if that's really the best way to go about it, to be honest.
I don't think so either.
A phone is a phone, and a desktop is a desktop, you know?
But it makes it easier for them.
Of course it makes it easier for them. They have one dedicated programmer group to handle the interfaces for everything, but it doesn't make it a better system, though.
You get a hardcore power user in there, somebody who's doing like graphic editing or video editing or music, you know, authoring, that type of stuff. These interfaces are not, you know, are not made for somebody who's going to sit there inside of some type of like a program like that all day. I sit inside of an IDE all day long, you know, writing code. You know, that interface does absolutely nothing for me, not one bit. I don't need all the flashy stuff. I want a way to shut it off permanently, and I should be able to.
But you have to bear in mind that Apple has already killed the video editing market on Macintosh their Final Cut Pro, which was used by professionals. They dumbed it down to the point at which professionals are annoyed at them.
I don't know. Like, I was watching this, I think it was a TV program, and they were doing video editing, and the damn thing kept crashing on them. And it looked like it was a failing new machine that they were running it on, so...
Well, what's the one that Linux just got that was a professional one that they open source? Light something or another?
Lightroom?
I don't know. I forget what it's called, but it was made big news a little while back, but they hadn't, you know, it took them a while to kind of convert everything, but it's just getting released now on, you know, on Linux, so that you'll be able to go in and have a full, what do they call that, linear video editor? You know, it's a full cut, fully, you know, professional grade, you know, video editor.
Non-linear just means that you can cut and paste the different sections of video and put them in whatever order you want them in. And that's what basically they do with, like, you know, when they're doing movies or TV shows. You know, they shoot out maybe a sequence and they just patch it together, you know?
My problem is I just don't have the time for video, and I sort of wonder if it would add anything to any project I'm doing.
You know, I have a bunch of old digital videotapes that I have to... I got to dump and edit them, some videos of the kids when they were young kids. You know, I still have that. I still have my old, you know, digital camera with the tape in it, and you know, mini DV, whatever. And it's, you know, it's standard F, and it's old already. It's outdated, and there's no reason to use it. I could take better videos with my phone now. You know.
Yeah. I dumped all the raw footage from that stuff onto my NAS box in the hopes that one day I will do something with it. Right now, I just have them dumped out as little MP4 clips that I just throw into a directory that's labeled with each of the kids' names on it so they can see different things that they were doing. But other than that, all the video that I do now, it's like you just said, it's on the phone. I just do it on the phone. I have that little mount that I set up on the tripod. I'll set the phone up on the tripod and stuff like that, and that thing works great when it comes to you know, setting up the phone and keeping it steady.
How much does that thing cost? Yeah, because if you're gonna do shoot some real videos, you know, that's like the number one thing. You gotta keep it nice and steady.
It was like $35. Well, I got it when it was a Kickstarter project, but now that it's been released, I think it's like $30 or $35, which really isn't that bad at all. And you can screw it into any you know, tripod. You know, it just fits on a standard, what is it, a quarter inch thumb screw type thing, and it'll just, you just spin it right down on top of that, and you can put it on any tripod.
Yeah, the worst thing is if you have shaky cam, that'll ruin any video.
Yeah, make everybody nauseous.
That's the number one rule, is you got to have a nice steady camera that's you know, that's not moving around while you're filming.
That's why I haven't digitized my old VHS-C tapes.
Too shaky.
I'm convinced they were. I did have a tripod that was made in Skokie in the 60s for many years, but I always forgot to set it up.
Yeah, I had a bunch of old VHS tapes that I digitized. I used my old Hapag 150 card to, you know, make them into MPEG-2s, and you know, I got like those old home videos and stuff. My parents have some old Super 8 videos of me and my brother when we were kids. I should probably get those converted before the film degrades to the point where you can't watch it anymore. I have no idea how much that costs. Do you guys have any idea what that might run?
Try Scan Cafe. They do it in India cheaper.
Cool. I'll check it out. You mentioned Scan Cafe because you were converting a bunch of slides, right, that your father had from all his trips and whatnot?
Well, mostly from the late 60s through the 70s and into the 80s, my father, you know, did all the slides, some of the developing himself, some professionally, and they've been rotting for years. So I shipped them off, had them digitized for, you know, it took a lot of money, but I threw out the slides. I put them up onto a website that does photography storage. And my mother actually has a Kindle Fire and a phone. She has the app that hooks into that. And she goes and spends hours looking through these old pictures.
My only concern with digitizing everything is, what happens if the power doesn't come back, like that TV show Revolution, where there's some kind of energy dampening field and we're unable to turn on any electronic device and we won't have any more pictures?
Well, I think we have a lot bigger problems than pictures then, if that's the
case. Yeah, I guess so. Next door neighbor will be breaking into your house looking for food. But what I'm... Have you guys watched that show by any chance?
I have been. I've been digging it.
They got. I'm really curious how they're going to explain how the power went out and has not come back. My only theory is some kind of damping field that the military developed, and they lost control of it. That's the only thing possible I can think of. If it was like an EMP type device, that's a localized thing, and once the thing goes off and it fries the electronics in the area that it's near, you could build new devices or bring in devices from other areas, and they would work just fine.
But then we'd just be remaking Dark Angel.
I guess so, yeah. I don't know. It seems that that show, I mean, it seems to be a high-quality show, but I don't know. It seems to be going kind of some of the places that shows like Jeremiah and Jericho, you know, went. Did you ever watch those shows? Jeremiah was the one with Luke Perry and Malcolm Jamal Warner.
Miles is a freaking badass in that show. He is something with a sword, I'll tell you.
I don't know.
He goes and tears up those guys.
I have other issues too. The whole thing with the guns. It seems that like some people still have their guns, and I know that like you know they say that the militias outlaw them and by penalty of death and whatnot. But then you see like the soldiers from the militia using black powder rifles. You know, basically Civil War era technology. You could reload modern weapons and ammo with no electricity. Reloading is fairly simple. The only thing you would need is shell casings made of brass. You know, your bullets, you know, they're pretty easy to come by, and just basically smokeless gunpowder and your primers to ignite them. So, you know, if somebody has that equipment, you don't need power to do that.
But at the time of the blackout, though, all of that was all automated through some type of a machine facility that needed electricity to produce it all. It's a lost art now on how to, you know, handcraft those things anymore.
But you know what, though? My dad, you know, is a gun enthusiast, and he does his own reloading. And it's a little it's just like a little thing where, you know, you measure the stuff out, you drop it in, and you put the bullet in, and it crimps it.
The original casings were rolled out by some machine somewhere.
Yeah, but you
which
know,
needed electricity.
They last, though. You know, if you have brass casings, unless you're shooting them constantly, they don't wear out right away. You know, and ammo will last forever. I mean, you buy ammo now, it's old military surplus from like, you know, the Eastern Bloc countries, old Romanian or you know, the Yugoslavian ammo. That stuff, as long as the ammo stays dry, it'll last forever, pretty much.
Pat, you stockpiling ammo somewhere? That whole blowout in the basement with the hot water heater? That was just a cover, wasn't it?
That had nothing to do with it.
That was a cover. Yeah. You built a damn bunker down there, huh?
I wish.
Well, you're lucky, Dan. You live only a few minutes from him. In the event of an apocalypse, you can go over there and have him protect
you. Whole family's crowding in Pat's house.
I wish, man. I wish.
I'm in the city, you know. Bad things happen in the city.
Oh, you're a goner, man. Forget it. They're going to be kicking in your door and, you know, while you're sleeping.
I will defend myself with my something.
But back to that show Revolution, one other issue I had with it, too, is, you know, okay, cars aren't running. One thing that you can do is you can build a wood-powered car engine. It's called a wood gasifier. Basically, it'll burn wood, and it'll convert the fumes given off into the burnable fuel for combustion engine. And it's a purely mechanical process. It's no electricity involved. If you ever watched the show The Colony, who we had the guy on from on Tech Show, John Cohn, you know, the guy who works for IBM, he was on that show. And one of the things that they did during that show was they built a wood gasifier engine conversion. They got a regular internal combustion car engine, and they basically modified it to run on wood.
But you have to be a genius like that guy to build those types of things.
You know, if you're mechanically inclined, which I'm not, you know, you're a car gearhead, you could probably pull that off. You know, I'm sure there's documentation on how to do it.
And it's all stored online, and you can't get any of that stuff because the power's cut out.
Yeah, you got to get some books. That's the thing. I think that's the key to survive the coming end of the world. Some dead trees books. That's what you need.
That's like a Kindle, only it ignites, right?
Exactly. Worst case scenario, you can always burn it, stay warm. But now that we're off topic.
But that's the fun of podcasts. Staying on topic is so filled with a point.
You could double this as one of your Flying Bathtubs episodes, sans the Jerry Jones.
Well, we haven't done one in a while, and we keep talking about figuring out what to do with that.
But you did have a reason you wanted to come on and talk to us, so let's have at it.
I always like talking to you guys. We don't talk often enough.
I know. I've been bad. I haven't been to a conference in a while. This year's been very bad for me. Next year, I hope to go to at least a couple of them. I want to go to at least a High Linux Fest in either Southeast or Northeast. So next year, I plan on, you know, being a little more around.
Well, you know, I always find it nice to see you in person.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I've been, this year was bad for me. I had just a ton of different things happening.
Well, if it works out, I'm sure I'm not the only person who would enjoy your presence.
Yeah. So I definitely want to go to the Northeast. Both of you guys went to that one last year, right?
Yeah, and I'm hoping to talk at this one coming up.
But if you come, I might not be able to convince Dan to be my roommate again.
You should have seen us at OLF a couple of times. How many people do we pack in like those two rooms? You know, Pat, that first, I know it was the first time that I was out there. We packed a lot of people out there.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But you know what? We're being cheap and frugal, and we're trying to save some money. So that's why you do that kind of thing. And it's just a room to sleep in, you know? Really spending all your time at those conferences, talking to people and hanging out, you know?
I'll go bring my army cot.
Yeah, inflatable mattress, that works. So when is Northeast Linux Fest? That's why in March, right around St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same day again this year. That weekend, that's right around St. Patrick's.
And we got
Southeast because they have the whole thing
in June, right?
Yeah, around my birthday.
I gotta see how it works out. Northeast is probably, well, that's gonna be bad for me. Northeast. Now that I think about it, I'm planning on going down to Florida with the family in March.
Just try to avoid any tropical storms while you're down there. Otherwise, you get dumped on like we did.
Well, March is pretty much not the season. The season when there's bad storms is summer into fall, early fall.
Yeah, we went right after SELF, like about 2 weeks or so, and it ended up... We ended up catching a tropical storm, Debbie, while we were down there. She was a lovely, lovely storm.
Debbie does Disney?
Yeah, we threw on the ponchos and made our way out, or I should say waded our way out through the parks.
At least the crowds were small.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. That wasn't bad at all.
Well, the last time I was at Disney, it was 20 degrees and unseasonably cold. So
that is cold.
The lines there were non-existent.
What time of the year was that?
That's the ultimate speed pass.
Assuming no, that wasn't December, that was January.
Wow, that is really cold.
But this year I am going in December. I'm going to be visiting Legoland.
Oh, that's an idea. Where's that? Is that in Orlando?
They just built it. There is one in California, but they just built a new one in Orlando that I want to check.
Oh, I have to go for that.
Ironically, none of my nieces or nephews seem interested in Legoland, but I do.
My older guy likes Legos.
If I don't like it, I can leave. I've walked out of better places than that. I walked out of, what was it, Colonial Williamsburg.
Really didn't like that.
Well, I don't know. I was blaming my parents for a 3-day pass. How much Colonial can you stomach?
That's why they had to build Water Country USA down there.
Yeah, there's other stuff to do down there. I mean, you got Jamestown is interesting.
Well, actually, Dan just identified what actually happened.
Oh, you want
my parents. What a park. This was when I was a kid. My parents picked this up, took us down the road to Water Country USA.
You also got Busch Gardens down there.
I've been there too.
Yeah, I think they're the same parent company now.
That would explain why I got the dual pass.
Yeah, it's not a bad place down there. It's things to do. And Virginia Beach isn't too far from that.
Well, what is there to do in the Allentown, Bethlehem, etc. area?
Dorney Park and Wild Water Kingdom, baby.
You know, I haven't been there once.
Never?
Never.
I was there when I was a kid. I also went to that one in Vernon, New Jersey.
Oh yeah, I remember that place, Action Park. Remember that?
Yeah.
Actually, if you check out the movie Hairspray, the one with Ricky Lake from way back when, that's the theme park is Dorney Park. You know what? So that's where they filmed that whole sequence.
You know what's interesting? There's like a small amusement park that supposedly was one of the oldest amusement parks in the United States, and it was right down the road from me. And
Bushkill Park.
Yeah, this place was like, it's the bad thing is it sits between like these two rivers, and they're not really big rivers, but it's very low laying, and when they had floods a few years back, it basically wiped the place out, and The place hasn't opened ever since, and apparently...
I used to go there as a kid, and they had a big roller skating rink, so we would have, like, our birthday parties at that and, you know, go there and do stuff like that. Every Little League, you know, that I was in, they would always have a day at Bushkill Park, so all the teams would just kind of come and run around and do whatever you could do whatever you wanted to. They also had one of the oldest... original carousels in there that they ended up selling it to somebody, and I think it was shipped out to one of the bigger parks in where is it? Is it Indiana or what is the
one in Ohio's big? I forget the name.
Maybe it's that one. Cedar something. Cedar Rap. I forget what it's called, but there's one out there, and I believe it was shipped out there. But I know that was a big deal around here that the carousel was being shipped out.
It's a shame. Like I. That show American Pickers, those guys, they went to that place, and you know the guy who owns the park is basically struggling for money, and he really hasn't done anything for years since the place was literally underwater. And they bought a couple of these murals, these cloth murals, and it wound up that the two murals were like painted by this famous artist from the old, you know, carnival era, from, you know, early 20th century. And the things were worth like $10,000 a piece.
How much did they pay for them?
Well, originally they sold them, the guy sold it to the two guys from American Pickers for like, you know, $500 a piece. And then they got them appraised, and they were like, wow, we can't just, you know, take the money. So they basically drove back to the place and they gave the guy half the money.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah, that was like the right thing to do, you know.
That doesn't mean that people do it.
No. But it's kind of sad that place never opened up. It would have been nice to see it.
I have a lot of nostalgia moments like that.
When you're a little kid, it was great. You know, you didn't. There was nothing you couldn't go on or anything like that. So now I take my daughters, you know, to some place, and we find that there are things that my youngest one, she's 4 years old, she can't go on because she's just not tall enough yet.
Yeah, that's how I was. My younger boy is 5, and I totally know where you're coming from. That's why we fouled off on going down to Disney World, because, you know, I wanted both of them to enjoy it. So they're at the age now where I think they'll like it. So, you know, this is our quote-unquote first family vacation that we're going to go down to Disney in March.
I'll have you know, you people are depressing me with nostalgia here.
Well, that's why you got to have kids, man, so you can relive your childhood.
I can't. They destroyed my childhood. Sometimes in fires.
I don't know if I want to go down this road.
No, when I was a kid, I spent a lot of time in the Catskills.
The Catskills, yeah. I'm familiar with the Catskills.
Started out at the Stevensville Hotel, gone. Moved over to the Browns Hotel, was turned into condos. Last year, it burned to the ground, and all the families who were living there apparently still have some sort of legal issue. Moved on to the Concord. That was destroyed by the local fire department in a training exercise deliberately.
So, Guru, you're like me, how if I watch a TV show that it gets canceled within a season or two, except, you know, stay at places and they burn to the ground.
No, the same thing happens to me in television shows. If I like it, it'll get canceled.
Exactly. It's those crappy shows that you hate, the ones that come back season after season.
Yeah, right.
I'm still upset at Dog the Bounty Hunter for how long that lasts.
It's still on, that show?
It might be, I don't know, I give up paying attention, but it lasted much longer than I thought it would.
Oh, you know what one show that should have been, like, put to pasture, like, 20 years ago? Saturday Night Live, man. I'm shocked that show's still on, really.
It has its moments, you always say that, but it has its moments.
Ugh.
But is that worth the whole show?
They do like a 90-minute show, right? So out of that 90 minutes...
You can't be good. You can't be good every single skit, every single show for every single year.
So out of that 90 minutes, how much of it's good? Like a minute? 2 minutes?
No, I've always had issue with the sound quality for their musical guests, because it could be the best person, it could be the worst person, they always sound like shit. So whoever is on there... Now this year, I've noticed that it's been much better. But for the last like handful of years, they sounded very distant or something like that. Something just was not right. And there are people that I've seen who I know can sing, not just this crap, you know, autotune shit or whatever, but the people who can actually sing, and they go in there and they sound just like absolute ass.
I'm a fan of their old musical director.
Oh, the guy from Hall & Oates?
Kenny Vance, actually.
I know who you're talking about.
He's from Brooklyn.
Well, it's a New York show. It's, you know, it's only normally going to have a lot of people from New York area that are involved in it.
But, you know, I'm allowed to be a fan of his. He's done a lot in his own right. He also was with Jay Black and the Americans.
Yeah, but that show, the last time I remember, like, seriously, like, watching it regularly, oof, was like when they had Mike Myers on there and Dana Carvey.
The golden years.
I don't know if you could say those are golden years. To me, the golden years are like the 70s with, you know, the original crew. You know, John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and Gildner Ratner.
And the Landshark.
Yeah, you know, and Garrett Morris and Chevy Chase.
The second golden age, then.
Chevy Chase, he was just there one season, wasn't he?
Was it one or two?
I think it was just one.
Yeah, it was very short, I believe.
And then they brought in Bill Murray to replace him. And then they had the years with Eddie Murphy and, what's his name?
Joe Piscopo.
Yeah, that guy disappeared.
No, he's still around. He still tours as a stand-up comedian.
Does he really?
He was all ripped on like steroids at one point or something like that, and yeah, he was a mess for a while.
Why do you have to be on steroids if you're a professional comedian?
Stardom, right? It gets to you. Who was that one that
was? We know how much strength you need to do to lift those jokes. Maybe it takes a lot of strength to carry Eddie Murphy. I'm sorry, you guys are making me depressed and really nostalgic again. Right?
Kill the show. Bringing us down, man.
Let's talk some Myth TV here. So what did you want to talk to us about, Guru?
Well, I don't know. I've just been thinking about my setup again, and you guys have a good perspective on that.
Well, I think what you need to do is get a different provider than Time Warner. That would be a good start. I know that might be difficult, depending on where you live.
I don't think I can justify moving just because I dislike Time Warner Cable.
Hey, if you're really into watching TV, you know, anything's a go.
See, I know when I do go to move, the first thing that I check before anything, schools or anything like that, is how fast of an internet connection can I actually get from whatever's available in that area. If it's not good, I'm not moving there.
Well, can we just slowly bow our heads in prayer and pray for the gods of Fios to deliver me?
Yeah, my folks.
How likely is that? How likely is that though? Because they said, what is it? Maybe a year or so ago, that they were no longer expanding it. They were no longer gonna, you know, expand the markets or anything like that. It just became too expensive for them. But now I know there's a guy in the development here who installs Fios. So I don't know, you know, what are they doing? They you don't see those commercials anymore like they had where they were, you know, showing everything as blazing fast as it was or whatever. But I don't know. Is Fios, you know, still alive? Is it expanding? Is it going to be reaching out to different areas?
It's a block from my house, not figuratively.
You need to run a spool of Cat 5 down there and just jack into it somewhere. Find an open pole, just jack into it, and just tuck it along the curb.
Well, the problem is that my telephone wire comes from the opposing direction.
Yeah, I know in New York, it's mostly Time Warner, but there are some other ones in different areas. You know, there's Fios, and then there's even RCN in some parts of it.
That's about a mile away.
Yeah. But RCN is only in parts of Queens, right? I don't think it's in the other boroughs, is it?
I think part of Manhattan.
It's kind of odd how they got in there.
They have, in where my office in New York is located in the Google building up there, and they have, when you come out on one of the floors, they have a big RCN logo right there, and it's one of their main, I don't know what you want to call it. It's not like a data center. It's... I guess they run, you know, manage their telecom stuff through it. So that would be all your phone and internet and all your, you know, switching and whatnot for
central office.
Yeah, that type of stuff.
Well, if RCN wants to expand, I'm sure the city will cut them a deal.
Stay away.
Compared to Time Warner?
Actually, no. I can use a cable card and stuff like that. So in that case, it's good. It's just very expensive. I feel like I'm in like this little micro monopoly bubble here, where I can't get anything. I can get RCN, or I can go with like a dish, and I don't want to go with a dish. All of my neighbors who have it have had nothing but trouble with it in this area. I can't get anything else. Back in, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when Fios was just coming out, they said, oh, by 2014, we'll have Fios in the area. I don't see that happening anytime soon. You know, 2014 is going to come and go before you know, Fios will ever get here.
Well, the thing is, the reason why I'm optimistic is that I don't see them doing any large-scale build out of neighborhoods, but I see them filling in gaps where, you know, they expand a few blocks and they get Fios. I don't see them moving into new territory, per se. That's why I'm still optimistic they might get to me.
The smaller guy in the area is called Service Electric. They run right down the street that joins my street. And they're not allowed to come into my development because there are no, you know, above power lines. Everything is run underground. And they would have to dig up the whole development just to get it in there. And they're not allowed to come in and do that for some reason.
I don't care. Let them
dig it up for a short while.
When I first bought this house, you know, Service Electric was the only one that was in the area. And the service was okay. The cable TV was okay. And the phone was okay. I actually had the most problems with them was with their internet connection. The connection would drop, you know, I wouldn't say often, but sporadically. And then it would be out like, you know, half the day, whatever.
My thought is, though, I mean, I may stick with RCN, but I just want the competition to come in and lower the price.
Exactly.
I should be paying. I mean, if I move, you know, 2 miles down the road, I can get Comcast and get the exact same thing that I'm getting right now for $99 a month, and I'm literally paying double it, you know, for the internet speed that I have, the channel package that we have, and the phone in the house here.
Yeah. You do what I did. I called up Time Warner a few weeks ago and told them that I was considering switching to Fios and that I'd seen the ads coming to my house and that it was $89.99, and I checked their website and they said that new customers would also get those prices on Time Warner, and asked them why it was that they valued me less than, excuse me, that they valued a new customer more than they valued me.
What was their response?
How would you like to pay $89 for a year and we'll give you 2 free cable boxes?
That's a good deal then. It worked out for you.
I call up RCN every couple of months to try to do the same thing, but they don't give me shit.
Yeah, the thing
this
I know
the first time it's worked in a while.
RCN is when I had like satellite, when I had DirecTV or even Dish Network, they would give you like coupons for like free, you know, video on demand rentals. You know, RCN never does that ever.
I used to get free a little while ago, but that's it.
I haven't seen anything lately with that.
I used to get free premium, you know, every couple of months. They would say, oh, why don't you try a month of HBO, a month of Cinemax here and there. It used to be that every so often they would offer me something, but I haven't seen that in years.
The only thing RCN gave, they had, like, free Showtime for a year.
Does anybody watch Showtime?
Yeah, there's some shows I watch on there. There's that show Homeland, which is, like, you know, it's basically about an American soldier who gets captured by a terrorist network, and they brainwash him. And then he comes home, and, you know, he's like a sleeper agent.
That sounded good, but I didn't have Showtime at the time.
Yeah, that's a good show. I also like Californication, which is a David Duchovny series. That's a pretty fun show, you know. There's a couple other ones that show up on there sporadically that are decent.
I just can't see myself paying that much a month just to get this sporadic show.
You know what? It was free for a year, so I didn't pay anything.
That's the only reason I ever got premium cable.
You know, like, the stuff that's on, like, HBO, a lot of it's crap, not for nothing. There's, like, one or two shows that I might be interested in, series, and that's about it.
Yeah, but I always thought the movies were better.
They had a good bit on, what was it, Mad TV a long time ago of describing HBO. They called it porn with Emmys.
That's like Skinamax. They show like softcore porn after 11 o'clock at night.
But this was the shows too, like the at the time, like your Sex in the City and your what are some other ones that were on there? Dream On and all those shows.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those shows are crap. Sex in the City, that was a retarded show.
But it's spawned several movies and successful franchises.
Oh, that doesn't say anything.
Money talks.
I don't know. I don't buy into like award shows and stuff. You know.
Me neither. I can't stand them.
There's more important things in life. You know? Who gives a crap? You know.
I don't get an award for writing this good piece of code, right?
Exactly.
I did want to talk about the FCC for a moment, if you...
Go, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, being as I don't have as many options as people in Pennsylvania, for example, I rely on the fact that my cable company does not encrypt basic channels, but now the FCC has decided that they have the right to do that.
And I love their argument that they give.
Yes, they will save money on truck rolls, and they will pass it along to the customer.
Yeah, it's better for consumers. You believe that one?
Of course I believe that one. I believe it because it was told to me by the same guy who sold me that big bridge in Brooklyn.
But do they really need to roll a truck for somebody who's using an unencrypted signal into their TV?
Not really, no. They give them a cable card and they would stick it in there or whatever. Or not even a cable card, just a direct input into a TV, you know?
Right, so how is that saving them anything when they're not getting... I mean, they may get calls about it, but they're not going to roll something out if you're not physically using their hardware, right?
They're saying that it's cable theft for you to watch local broadcast stations using a wire in the wall that's provided by the cable company.
That's a load of bull.
Yeah, all these government agencies, they all get paid off by lobbyists for these different companies. That's basically what it is.
Don't get me started on lobbyists. I think that is the worst thing allowed here.
Yeah, it's pretty much ramming our government into the ground.
Let's all move to Canada.
So what
sure,
do you think,
though? Their cable system is superior.
To freaking fold up there.
What do you think, though, with about the IP, you know, box that they're going to have to provide you for, I think, what is it, 2 years?
You mean the box that will probably require some form of authentication that I'm sure Boxy will be thrilled about, but I don't know if necessarily MythTV will be thrilled about it.
Well, I think they need to provide you a way to have access, you know, in a sense, free, and I'm doing the little air quotes here, free access to this, to the content. But it's you're going to have to get it off of some other device. So you'll hook this thing up in this new box up in your house. You'll plug it into your router, and it will be responsible for allowing, you know, the individual boxes that you use to receive content. So whether it's a Boxy box, a Silicon Dust box, you know, something like that, it's just going to talk through like an IP, you know, signal in your house. It's going to talk through something in your house versus, you know, having, and that'll be kind of like the one point that will go back to the back end. So we should be okay, I believe, if I'm reading this right. You know, I mean, there's probably going to have to be some other type of hardware involved as well for MythTV. So whether, you know, Silicon Dust revamps their cable card box, you know, that same form factor and has something that just talks to these boxes, or you know something along that line is gonna have to take advantage of it, and MythTV is, you know, at some point gonna have to take advantage of it as well.
Well, did you read the actual FCC ruling in full?
No, I don't got time for that.
I did. Basically, one of the things that was said was that they do have the right to encrypt that or put some sort of encryption protocol even on this IP thing, but they have to license it under fair terms. So you'd have to find a company that wanted to license it and make something Linux compatible. And I suppose MythTV could go petition the government that whoever's providing this is acting unfairly.
Yeah, somebody at MythTV, get your legal department on that, right?
Yeah.
We might be able to find somebody who's a MythTV user who would do some pro bono legal work. Maybe the schedules direct people. Don't they have a lawyer involved?
They got somebody who deals with them. Went in to negotiate a contract, you know?
The truth of the matter is that it's looking like Linux as a platform may only be for broadcast.
Yeah.
And that's what concerns me.
Then you got Silicon Dust people, and then Seton Corp.
Useless.
Are they talking about getting rid of the cable card spec altogether as well?
Well, there are a bunch of problems with the cable card. They're not talking about getting rid of it, although it's supposed to be phased out when this whole IP thing comes through, and the whole all-of-it concept. But the problem with cable card is, when was the last time you saw a cable card-enabled television?
They were around a few years ago, but I haven't seen much lately.
As thin as these TVs are getting, there's really not a whole lot of room for them anymore inside. That's why you have an external box, whether it's a TiVo or you have an external box like what we all use. Sorry, not you, Dave.
thing is, what it comes down to is, can I go out and buy a cable box? I'm not even talking about the hobbyist, but if I want to go buy a cable box, how much can I pay for one? Can I go pick one up, even mail order from a company, put a cable card into it, and watch my television?
I believe so. Because you can, you don't have to rent. I don't believe you have to rent a cable box from your company anymore. You can go down to like a Best Buy and get one.
I don't know about that, man.
No, I know cable modems. Cable modems are different. You unfortunately cannot buy a cable box commercially. I want to go and let's do the math here. Time Warner Cable charges $10 a month for box rental plus a $4 digital duplication fee. They charge $2.50 for a cable card. So let's say, you know, that they would charge me the $4 anyway. Let's say that's $7.50 a month to use their box. How much is that a year? I'm waiting for somebody to get out their calculator.
I'm sorry, I got distracted. Someone was talking to me.
Okay. So that's $90 a year.
That's expensive. That's expensive.
So if you figure that in 2 years you could, if the devices come down to the, you know, the price of a computer, at least you could recoup that box. And if they become more commercially available, they could probably get it down to $100 or $150.
Yeah, but they don't allow it, you know.
No, they allow it. It's legal. The thing is that none of the manufacturers want to risk losing it because they have this exclusive contract with the cable companies. So why should they sell to individuals?
It's unfortunate. It's almost like the whole deal with, you know, satellite TV. Satellite TV was going to be like, you know, pick your own stations, you know, ad hoc, you know, and it just never happened, you know.
It's all package. At one point, they were supposed to do that with just a regular cable provider as well, but that never came about either.
And they were supposed to get rid of commercials too.
But nobody is going to license a channel to, let's say, an IP streaming organization. It's going to be the traditional cable companies who are going to do innovation, and they're going to be pushed by maybe the FCC a little, but they're going to be only be pushed if they have a compelling reason to do so. And the only compelling reason left is that they're afraid of losing to on-demand streaming media.
And the whole cut the cord, you know, movement. I don't know if that's going to happen. I have a Roku box. I like it for what it is, you know. But I don't know. I just couldn't see myself, you know, completely going off, at least over the air channels, you know. There are some things that I do want to watch, you know. I do watch some live sports. Occasionally I'll watch a news program.
It would be great if these companies would start doing this more, where they just broadcast a live stream of what they produce on the cable, on their cable channel equivalent, you know, all day long, right? We were talking about this, you know, a little while ago, Guru, about being able to set up an XML TV, you know, grabber. So if you could produce that spec that says this is my channel lineup, Myth TV should be able to, with the new HDB live streamer channel or tuner, I should say, be able to, you know, connect to something like that and be able to just record it as if it was broadcast over your existing cable, you know, company or your cable provider.
Well, that was what I proposed. I was playing with 0.26 using that system that later crashed. And I used the Twit Network, which does do 24-hour day streams, not live, but they have a set schedule. You know when their live programs are going to be. You don't necessarily know when their reruns are going to be. But you'd be able to go and, in theory, set it up. All you need is something that can take their calendar, which is publicly posted, and convert it into an XML TV file. And, you know, admittedly, it's not something that I would do, but that's, you know, an afternoon of, because it's one protocol to another.
So many broken promises.
I'm reasonably certain that there's some geek out there who wants Twit TV on their Myth TV box.
Well, I do it now, not for the Twit stuff, but for other you know, stuff that's broadcast out there through the Miro bridge. That stuff still works, you know, great for me. So I have no issue with still keeping that around just for that. I upload an OPML file into it, and it can just use that as its source and pull down the most current episodes of whatever's in that OPML file.
Yeah, but that's podcasting. I'm talking about recording it off of their live stream.
Right, I know.
As if it was a channel.
Well, Miro sets it up as a channel. It's channel 99, but I couldn't scan and look for upcoming things on that channel. So I'm guessing you would be able to do this with, you know, if you have that XML TV stream somewhere that posts the data for you.
Well, I'm sure you could get some volunteers to really get involved in that. There are enough really obsessive people who watch the Twit Network. There's somebody who's interested enough to do that. I'm interested enough to go and watch one or two shows on there, which I find interesting. I don't know if I'm obsessive enough to make sure that they have data for the rest of their lives.
I would set it up just as an experiment with them. You know, I mean, that would be great just to be able to say, oh, I can point, you know, to this URL and always know what's gonna be broadcast, what time of the day on it, and it would just fall under everything else that MythTV does for setting up and scheduling recordings with time changes and whatnot.
Well, I was hoping it would be a proof of concept for somebody to set up an HTTP live stream as a channel for something.
Maybe we should talk to Tracy Holtz about it, since he has that whole channel that he's broadcasting now.
Well, again, there's nothing that says that people can't put together channels using content that exists.
Just so long as you're allowed to broadcast it.
Well, this goes back to the question, if you do something live, is there a point in putting it into a recorder? For example, let's say you created a program, let's use some reality television examples, called Linux House. And Dan, you and Pat lived in Linux House, and you had conversations there that were all live streamed, and somebody wanted to watch them later. So you could have that as a live stream with a schedule. You know, from 2 to 3, Dan and Pat argue about why they gave up on Fedora. And from 3 to 4, Pat takes a nap and what have you.
I wish I could take a nap from 3 to 4.
AM, that's your red eye programming.
Oh, okay.
But you get my idea. Even though you could get on demand, there are people who would enjoy, you know, the radio format or the TV format, which is you don't know what's going to be next, or you know what's going to be next because there's a schedule. But you enjoy the option of channel surfing or randomly tuning in.
Hey, Dan, I want to bring up another topic with you.
Okay.
How's it going with that CEC capability integration?
I haven't had a whole lot of time to play with it with working on the MythTV app for Android, but I did today after I did the upgrade. I saw that they had put out like version 2 of the libcec driver, and unfortunately MythTV does not know anything about it, it seems. So all I get in my front-end log are warnings and errors when it comes to the CEC adapter, so it can't connect to it with this. So I gotta actually revert that back to the previous version to get any functionality out of it. My TV, unfortunately, also is a bit of a, it has a little bit of a problem. I have an LG TV and it supports CEC. Unfortunately, I can do things like move the arrows up and down with it, but I can't move them left and right. And if I try to hit the enter button, it tries to engage the TV's menu, not the MythTV menu. There was a point where I could actually get into it and start a recording, but I could never get out of it. So I couldn't hit like the exit button and get out of it. So it's something with my TV. And LG seems to have added some extra things in there. They call it, you know, it's their HDMI CEC, you know, capability, but it has something that's in there that's specific to LG. So I'm assuming if I had like an LG receiver or maybe an LG Blu-ray player, that this would be no issue. You know, these things would all just kind of pass back and forth to one another. But when I found that I couldn't do stuff with the LG remote control back to MythTV, that was the problem. Now, I think, however, when I get some time, I want to sit there and kind of script a little bit of this. I can actually map the buttons on the MythTV remote to send those signals through and say power off the LG TV. I don't have a receiver that supports the CEC spec yet, but I plan on getting one soon. Then you would, in a sense, daisy chain them all together. So I'd have the HDMI cable going out of MythTV into the receiver and then out of the receiver and into the TV. And you can kind of address your command. So let's say the zero device would be the receiver, the one device the one device would be the TV. So you can actually say on the one device, power it off. On the, you know, zero device, increase and decrease the volume type of a thing. So I hope to be able to sit there and get that set up at some point. But like I said, I've been too focused on the app right now that I haven't had a chance to get back and play with it.
Well, I actually do now have a receiver that supports CEC.
Well, if you have one of these little adapters, it's from a company called Pulse 8, and I think they're out of England.
and they ship it over to you. It's a little box. I mean, you literally, you know, you hook in your there's a little HDMI adapter that's like maybe like, I don't know, 3-4 inches long. That goes into your cable card and into the input of this little adapter. Then the regular HDMI cable goes out to wherever you're hooking it up to, either the receiver or the TV. And then there's a USB connection that powers it, and that's how it actually reads. It creates a device called /dev/TTYACM0, I believe is what it is. And from there, there's a CEC client that you can install, and that allows you to just interact with it, watch what it's doing. You can send commands specifically, like a power off or a power on. And it is able to, I mean, I've been able to do that. I can send the commands manually, so I know that I can script these things, you know, and tie them to an LIRC button, no problem.
Well, for me, my problem right now is that I need to rebuild the whole system. I have this odd problem with the front ends that I will shut them off using the option in Myth TV to shut them down. And then about a minute after they shut off, they turn themselves back on again.
That's weird.
APCI, and they're two different systems built. What was that?
Is it maybe an APCI thing in the BIOS or anything like that, or something?
But they're two different computers.
Yeah, okay.
Built at different times. And I think it's something in software, and one of the updates just made this start happening. I cannot get these things off without pulling the cord.
That's odd.
Very.
Definitely.
I wonder if it's setting a wake-up. Like something in Myth TV is setting a wake-up in the APCI. So that the BIOS thinks that it needs to turn it on like a minute later or something like that.
Well, this is one of those ideas that I had been puttering around in regards to the Raspberry Pi. I've been tinkering with one of those, and I sort of had this odd idea of the Pi acting as a wake-up controller for a Myth TV backend.
You could do that. Pat, you were doing that for a while, weren't you?
What's that?
Doing a wake on LAN type of a thing.
Yeah, I had that for a while. My old system from like, I don't know, four years ago maybe. I used to do the wake on LAN. It would go to sleep and, you know, it would, if there was a recording, it would turn on by itself.
Well, the reason I was thinking of the Pi was because the Pi would have enough power to allow you to, let's say, check the schedule and possibly modify the schedule while the main system was off.
It's an interesting idea, what you're describing.
Well, I was actually thinking of Dan's Myth TV for Android app, not necessarily an Android version, but I know with all of the work that he's been doing, putting something together that would download the program guide data and the recording data, and I know I was talking to him in regards to having the functionality in the Android app where you could schedule something, and it would actually schedule it on the back end once it got within range if it happened to not be connected.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it, and I know there's some things that I need to put in place beforehand, so like to be able to auto-determine if you are on like your home network or if you're away from your home network, so that you would in a sense turn on queuing at that point. And then if you are connected, either, you know, I almost want to be able to open an SSH connection into the back end and do that stuff automatically, so that it does all the right port forwarding and everything like that for you. Or something with VPNs, if you can get a VPN connection into your network, or if you're just going to expose the thing, just expose the thing. But a way to be able to be connected to it and determine that you are no longer on your home network or you are away from your, you know, and then ultimately make sure that all the subsequent calls get made correctly so that you're not, you know, getting a, you know, an errored out page or something like that. And then to enable some type of a queuing and stuff like that to hold that stuff and then push it up to the, you know, backend server once you are in range type of a deal. You know, there's a lot of stuff that needs to go into that.
But last week you had a gentleman on who had a rather large system.
Oh, yeah. He's got a system, all right.
I just was sitting there. I was listening partially in my car and partially on a treadmill at the gym. I'm trying to be better about that sort of thing. Thank you for getting me through that, because you and a bunch of other podcasts helped me. Because my goal is to get through it so that I can go and write a comment about what I just heard.
No problem.
Yeah, I actually was listening in the car and I had to pull over and stop and send a tweet to one of the hosts explaining what borscht was. Sorry, I just thought that was weird. I don't know why somebody would bring up borscht if they didn't know what it was.
Well, anyway.
I got sidetracked again, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's getting late. I think we're going to wrap it up unless you got something else to talk about.
I was just going to finish my thought and then I...
Go ahead.
But basically, as I've grown as a Myth TV user, I've gone from building these insanely big backends. I started with this gigantic server-based case that I got in yellow because for some reason the yellow one was on sale for $17 and the black one was $100. Actually, I could probably guess why that was. But basically, I've been downscaling over and over again, and I keep making smaller and smaller systems. And right now, I'm in a standard tower. But I've come to the conclusion, you know, with both my front ends and my back ends, that I keep trying to make them smaller, take up less space, do less, and be more focused on what it is they need to do. And this is one of the reasons I was going to engage both of you and also anybody who's listening, which is, what's next for that? If I keep going and I keep trying to make things simpler and I keep trying to make things more and more like, let's say, a commercial system where there aren't a lot of extra pieces and everything works very efficiently. And you know, that goes to what some people refer to as the, what is it, the partner acceptance factor? I don't have a partner, but it's the same.
Wife acceptance factor.
Well, I don't want to be gender specific here. But in my particular case, I do not have a significant other, so I don't have anybody who needs to accept anything. But you know, the idea is I keep making things simpler, and where does that go? Where does it go when you keep trying to stop?
I'm kind of right there with you. I mean, if you look at the system that I have on the Myth TV Cast, you know, webpage in the store out there, it's as small as I could get at the time. Now, it probably is in need of an update because it was a good year ago that I think I spec'd that system out. And I built that system, and it is very small. It is very quiet. I ultimately feel, though, however, I want to get to the point where I can kind of strap this thing, say, to the back of a TV that's kind of sitting on a mount. You know, and for that I need something that is very, very thin. You know, I need to be and it's gotta fit in a relatively small space, right? I wanna be able to have, you know, in a sense, one wire coming out of this thing. You know, I should say that, two wires. You have an HDMI, you know, cable going into the TV, you have an Ethernet cable and a power cable, and that's pretty much it. You know, I mean, I want to be able to use things like CEC to control it so I don't have all of the remote controls around and I have less wires. I don't have IR blasters or anything like that anymore. I want to be able to send the appropriate signal to the receiver to do the audio controls, to, you know, switch the inputs around, you know, if I'm hooking up a game system instead of watching TV at the time. I want to be able to do all these things, and I want to make them as small and as clean as possible, and I don't want a nest of wires. I built this whole entertainment center just for the fact that I knew that wires just, you know, kind of dominate the thing. So I want to be able to go back into it, open it up from the backside, and never have to see that from the front side. So I in my mind, smaller systems, quieter systems, low power systems, less wires, all of that stuff is all going to play into the future of this.
But could you do something, since you can't necessarily do a Pi right now, could you do something like an Atom-based system and then have a slave backend that does transcoding if you need it?
Well, my front-end system is an Atom-based system right now. You know what I mean? So, but I could probably get a smaller board today and a smaller case for it and potentially do something to strap it to the back of that TV up there so it does not actually sit on top of the bookcase that's below where that TV is hanging, right? I think that... I think that the new Raspberry Pis are getting closer. I don't know that they're the exact answer yet. I know there are some other boards that are out there. I think you have one, don't you, Guru, that's a small, like, Android-based one. Now,
MK802. I have actually not tested it with your app because I have been working with the Pi right now, and I have been leaving it for a different occasion. You can actually now get one for $40.
Yeah, and those types of things are very small. They have Wi-Fi built into them. You know, you literally, if you can get the MHL, if your TV supports the MHL spec, I believe it is, you can power those things right off of the HDMI cable. You don't need an external, you know, micro USB cable to power the thing. So, I mean, in that case, you know, it becomes, you know, pretty nice. Now, I don't know if the Ubuntu TV is ever going to come to fruition, but if you could, in a sense,
load up, say, a MythTV front end right on there, that kind of solves a lot of that stuff. You offload all the MythTV front ends to a dedicated TV, and then you just have your back end somewhere. I don't know that that's what people want to do. I don't think people were too keen on, you know, Unity for a TV interface or anything like that. But I mean, that in my mind is a bit of a step in the right direction, though, where you have a full-blown, you know, Linux TV that you could potentially add apps to it, you know, like a MythTV front end, and have it talk to your back end on the network. I think that that would be a great solution. And you're eliminating boxes, you're you know, reducing how much power is being drawn, you know, all that kind of stuff. Eliminating wires, that type of thing.
Yeah, eliminating wires is where I want to see it go.
I'm just dreaming the dream, and I want people to dream with me. The dream where things get simpler and where there's still a lot of power, but basically you don't have the wires, you don't have the large systems if you don't need them. And I'd rather have three small systems than one large system, because one, it takes up less space, it uses less power. You end up maybe actually having to heat your house in the winter.
And you can kind of almost build in a little bit of redundancy there, so should you have a hardware problem and not everything goes like mine did, you can kind of, you know, recover much more quickly, I think.
Well, that's why I keep thinking of these new systems on a board, and it's not just the Pi, Via's doing one and a bunch of other companies, where, you know, the system comes as a very basic stripped-down system, and it doesn't have a lot of amenities, so all you do is you add what you need. And in the case, just to use the Pi as an example, I have one sitting here that's running. I happen to be using this recording to test the new DarkEye streamer, which I use for Android Buffet, and the new one is running off of a Pi very effectively. So the Pi is sitting there doing that, and if I wanted the Pi to do something else, I just turn it off, pull out the SD card, stick in another SD card that's a completely new version of the operating system that may just do one other thing. So it's like the old days, where you used to put in a disk to run everything. So instead of a hard drive, my program runs off of an SD card, and I can switch functions that way, and why not?
Good stuff. Good conversations, guys.
And I'd like to hear, if anybody does write you guys and has some thoughts on this, how do we make things smaller? How do we make them simpler? How do we, you know, admittedly old computers work very well for front ends, but how do we use what's coming down to make a more state-of-the-art, I'll use the term I've been using, the embedded system, which is, it looks like it was custom built for the purpose you're having rather than something that we put together. So, well, actually, that would be custom built, wouldn't it? But basically something that was professionally built as opposed to a hobbyist thing. So does it look like a cable box? Does it look like one of these commercial systems that have been made by professional engineers?
Good stuff.
I'm going to stop talking now because I know everybody wants to go to bed.
Yes, I got to get up early for work. Guru, thanks for coming on the show, man. It's been good talking to you. We'll have to do it again.
Well, you know that I will go any excuse to talk about my passion, and I think you guys are the same way. Any excuse to have a fascinating conversation, I'm there.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. Everybody, have a good night, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye.
Later.